This talk was given by Jody Hojin Kimmel Sensei at Zen Mountain Monastery. Hojin Sensei is a resident teacher at the monastery and co-director of the Zen Center of New York City. This talk, like all of our talks, is offered free of charge. If you'd like to make a donation or find out more about our retreats and residency programs, visit our website at zmm.org. Thanks for listening.
The subject tonight is love. The subject tonight is love, and for tomorrow night as well. As a matter of fact, I know no better topic for us to discuss until we die. I think that's the main case of all of my talks, so I'll be repeating it often. And I've been reading a book by Sharon Salzberg this week, and her opening, it's called Real Love. It's good. And she has a quote by James Baldwin to start the whole book. And she says, and he says, James Baldwin, love takes off masks that we fear we cannot live without and know we cannot live within. So this weekend, we had a retreat that I still feel very full with, as we say, which was a lot of very enjoyable. And it was called Live Lines, and we were studying the four immeasurables, and it's and a study of that through the creative process. The four immeasurables are four qualities of us as humans. Loving kindness, compassion, sympathetic or empathetic joy, and equanimity. That those are qualities of who we are. And I think if we just look at them, we also know there's a lot of opposition to that as we live our life. And that's really our path, a bodhisattva path of liberation is finding those obscurations and freeing it into what has never been apart from us, those qualities. So we were looking at meditation practices as well to cultivate these. And I was also given a talk by Kyoto Williams from Jordan, and she speaks like many of how nobody is unemployed, that we all have a job, and that job is on the bodhisattva path. If we're choosing that path of liberation, it's a full-time commitment to not only liberation for ourself, but that has to be connected to others. There's no way to separate it out. That I can't be fully liberated until everyone here is. And she says, so hurry up. Let's do it. Bodhisattva citizens. Those who identify with a path of liberation, committed to seeing each other, seeing that our birthright is exactly this love, which is a loaded word. So I'll go into it a little bit more, but we looked at in the retreat, what is it to be alive? What makes a line of a sutra, an encounter, a practice of the Dharma, alive for us personally? How do we bring it to life? So this talk, I feel, deals more with equanimity, a balanced mind, which is the last one listed, but I think it goes through all of them first. Equanimity, a balanced state of mind, not discriminating or being biased towards those you love not that we just get along easily with what is agreeable to us, but it means not distancing ourselves from those we don't get along with, those who are different from us. Or even worse, have hurt us in some way, that we don't distance from that. That's equanimity. So you see why there's a lot to oppose the practice of equanimity? It's very important not to develop discrimination or bias. Discernment is something different, because when we do that, not many of the good qualities can come out. They can't be generated sincerely and thoroughly. What is it that opposes our balanced mind? Imbalances occur with aggression towards something or the passions for something that are very strong, and that it's so strong it turns to aggression and increases our level of what we expect. So that goes against the equanimity. The passion that makes us hungry and crave for things to be a certain way. And of course that has a boomerang effect. Aggression increases us to be more hungry and want more, doesn't it? So it keeps turning against ourselves. A biased attitude is never far behind. This is paraphrasing Khandro Rinpoche. The impulses of passions, aggression, and confusion, we become very partial to whatever severs our, whatever serves our expectations, and very biased against whatever comes between moi, my expectations, and biases are fueled by aggression. When our life is imbalanced by the extreme indulgences of passion, aggression, and confusion, our equanimity, our balanced state of mind is lost. And the attitude of bias sets in. And this is why we worked on the word cultivation, why we have to cultivate water and study the subtle factors that oppose us as being fully human. So I've been drawing recently, I just wanted to cite some of the influences that have come in for this talk and just in recent practice life. Khandro Rinpoche, as I said, Tenzin Palmo, who is working on, speaks about the immeasurables, Martin Luther King and Gandhi, Dalai Lama, Kyodo, Shugen Sensei. And this verse by the third ancestor, the Faith Mind poem, very much so, as a kind of antidote to help cultivate equanimity. Because that's what this old treasured verse is about. It's a classic. In a way, it's a very Taoist description of a balanced state of mind. We might call it, those of you that practice Shikan Taza, Shikan, balanced state, Shikan. And that's what we're encouraged to practice, whether it be the breath, just taking our seat. Even-mindedness, that does need to extend through loving-kindness, compassion, and our boundless joy, this even-mindedness. And it's a practice that requires a lot of concentration. It's not just sitting down and mulling over our life. by any means. Those of you that practice it know that core alertness in shikantaza, at ease, balanced. It's learning how to allow each and every thought to drop away until we're just in this beautiful space of the moment. And I almost, when we started the talk, just, I think it could have, the best discourse was going on outside with the crows and the rain. So sorry to muck it up a bit. Vast sky practice. And we're in that space, even if it's just for a moment with our breath, there's no judgment. There's no judging ourselves or others. Even if it's a tiny little space, everything's just there, whatever is. Even if you're dying, and in a big way we are, when there is equanimity in that space, it's okay. We're just right there. We're just right there. And it's hard for us to think of that when we're clinging and shot through with all the things we attach to our desires, to our cravings, but it's there. The space where there's no separation. That is really open to us. It really is. And every time I think I try and say something, it sounds like it's something really mystical. But it is. It's just really completely here. Songkhni Rinpoche, who I worked with a little bit, to get us kind of there when we sat down, he had us yell and bang our knees, to just like drop it. So he did that a few times just to like get the release out. So do that before you come in the Zendo. But you'll see I do lift my hands and I do that. I still carry on that practice. It just, you know, reminds me. But we have to communicate. And anytime we try and use a metaphor, it kind of goes away from this. So how do we do that? The way we sit, our posture, and practice, we get better at what we do. So we get better at being very concerned about our life. We get very better at being very discontented, or we get very better at letting go. It's actually a choice that we make moment to moment in our practice of Zazen, in our life. And I'm always shocked by that. I think in some ways, you know, as a child, you're still looking for like, no, this isn't how life is it? That we have choice to be discontented or change it? We don't get the manual, as is often said when we pop out. This is how you live your life. And mostly, we get the message and we have constricted around the construct that things, the self, are very fixed. This solid thing. And we don't get the message that there is a fundamental misunderstanding of who we are. That's the basis of ignorance. We don't know who we are. And I know it's part of what we did in the retreat was we worked with watercolor so we can enter the flow, because water flows. I mean, it can be hard as ice, but this was watercolor flowing. And I know that each of us at some point has experienced a flow in our life, right? Somewhere. Riding a bike, playing music, dancing, swimming, bathing, something. Walking, where there's just a complete moment of flow before there's any judgment. before something comes back and constricts us, constricts our just being. And then we think, oh, look what's happening. Or we say, this is the most wonderful thing in the world. Look what's happening. And we build this another substructure around the experience that's gone now. Because what the spirit experience has now turned into is another building, another description of a wonderful event, rather than the thing that just happens. And for many of us, we get stuck there. So this Faith Mind poem, which was written by Sitsang, the second ancestor. Hold on for a second. Something got switched around here. Yeah, the third ancestor in China after Bodhidharma says, make the smallest distinction, however, and heaven and earth are set infinitely apart. Moments of flow when we're just present. Make the smallest distinction, and heaven and earth are set infinitely apart. So this poem starts off, the great way is not difficult for those who have no preferences. When love and hate are both absent, everything becomes clear and undisguised. Make the smallest distinction, however, and heaven and earth are sent infinitely apart. So we can use our hara, the area below our navel. It's a very important area for us. And when we're driving our car, or when we're walking down the street, or being bullied, or rushed, or impatient with humanity, rather than clicking in to our habitual aversive thinking and feeling, take a breath. We can do this. This is the cultivation. Because the other clicks in so fast, right? Bleep, bleep. I mean, look at Kintin when someone's walking slow in front of you. It's like road rage. It's like, look at your mind. It's like, come on, what's wrong with you? You know, I'm just being nice right now. I'm sure there's other savory pieces that come in. So just see what that's like to open, to just take a breath and be really conscious of your hara. Allow yourself to experience your anger, your impatience, your discomfort, your anxiety. Allow yourself to experience it. Or we're looking at a beautiful body going down the street. We can just take a breath and really feel our presence. And then if you want to continue to crave that which is in front of you, it's okay. Just don't make a judgment of it. So practice, of course, is not only on our cushion, it's in our life. Just notice that all we need is a hair's breadth difference between our reaction and ourself. Because what we're doing is creating a slight separation. We're acknowledging that there is some difference between our anger and being. And just let it be that breath, just noticing. That noticing. So Sozan, who wrote this poem, was a leper. And to be a leper back in those days in the 6th century, or any time, is pretty tough. I mean, he wrote this in such pain and agony. For whom? For his care, for his love. He was a lay person until he was 40 years old, and then he was ordained and he practiced with Huiko. Huiko, as you remember, was Bodhidharma's first successor. who, remember the koan, my mind is not yet at peace. And Bodhidharma says, well, bring me your mind and I'll put it at rest for you. And then we don't know the amount of time that went by, but Huiko comes back and he says, I can't find it. I can't find it anywhere. And Bodhidharma says, there, it's at rest. So this is Huiko's Dharma heir. And he comes up to him and says, I am riddled with sickness. Please absolve me of my sin. And Huiko says, bring me your sin and I will absolve you. After a while, which we don't know how long a while is, and if you're in training, a while could be 20 years before you return to say, when I was looking for my sin, I couldn't find it. I can't find it. And Huiko says, there, I've absolved you. You should live by the Buddha, Dharma, and Sangha. So either way, the mind is not a thing, right? It's said that when, and this is in 606, it's said that when he finally died, he stood up in Gassho with a tree. We don't have a lot of facts, but that one seemed to make it through. And he gave us this poem which has endured to instruct and inspire us as Zen students 1,400 years later. He wrote, it is not simply information that we read to assimilate. So it's not something we kind of take in munching on a donut. However, try it. We have to work at this. It's realization and it requires effort over a long period of time. And we practice, and it's nothing less than a rerouting, a transformation, a breakup of our constructs, of our perceptual processes that we hold so dearly. So when the word practice is used, it's not just here sitting zazen in the zendo. It's done at all times throughout the 24 hours. So this poem gives us clear instructions on how to proceed towards liberation from holding our thoughts in bondage, because it takes someone to bind us. Our thoughts are not in bondage. Don't let the mind fall into comparisons at all. Wow. Can we do that? Jesus. And in this poem, there's 34 pairs of opposites that he uses as examples what not to create in our mind, your mind. Love and hate, like and dislike, heaven and earth, for and against, lack and excess, accepting, rejecting, outer things, inner feelings, activity and passivity, one, the other, assertion, denial, emptiness and reality, this and that, right and wrong, coming and going, free and in bondage, dislike and accept, wise and foolish, one and many, rest and unrest, illusion and enlightenment, gain and loss, right, stationary and moving, movement and rest, self and other, other than self, being and non-being, one thing and all things, yesterday and tomorrow. Don't create that in your mind. We might say, really? Like, am I to really, like, trust this? That's why it's called trusting mind. But what mind are we speaking of? Look at a period of zazen, how much time we do this. I'm doing it wrong. She must be doing it right. I hate him. I love her. Too fast, too slow. I like this, don't like that. Falling behind, control, control, control. so fearful to be quiet, so fearful to enter silence. Uncertainty, that puts us in a state of not knowing or defining, which is so riveting, right? Life is uncertain, but we don't like that. So in the poem, I think he's pointing out, when we let go of these oppositions, our mind might become very quiet and very expansive, radically inclusive. You see it? How it does that? And we can find this out for ourselves. And he sang this as a song of enlightenment. What a pleasure it must have been when he recited this. That's what we were working with, the pleasure of reciting our liturgy, the aliveness it can give us. The great way is not difficult to those who have no preferences. When love and hate are absent, everything becomes clear and undisguised. Make the smallest distinction, however, and heaven and earth are set infinitely apart. When love and hate are both absent, that's a hard line for most of us, at least for me. Most of us say, yeah, we shouldn't hate, we should love, right? That's asking a lot. There's a sense of equating love and hate. And more I appreciate that aversion, hatred, marginalizing is just the other side of love. It's the same thing, just a different way of doing it. You know, come here, go away. Same time. Come here, go away. I used to have a restaurant and I used to go to, no, it was actually like a spa place for swimming. And their sign was never, it was always like some letter was dropped off or paint was like not fixed or it was crooked. And I was always getting this message like, come here, go away. Like open, like the P was off the open, it just said O-E-N. And it was like, what's up with that? Do you want me in or out, you know? It's kind of mixed message. So what is he getting at in how we work with love and hate? Everything becomes clear and undisguised. So if we think about love, we think about all the things mostly that encompass our idea of love. And so it's really tricky territory. When I think about love and what is presented as love, a lot of the things I called love was not love at all. Ideas. That's, we spoke about Dida Roshi. He used to go out, and one of his favorite koans in photography was to go out and take an image and receive an image. He said, go out and make love with light. Not your idea of love, but let love find you. Find the resonance. Just hold how you have felt it and let yourself be taken rather than taking the image. Let it take you, your subject. And you can give this to a quality of light. He said, if we go out and look for love, he always said two things will happen. We will find it or we won't. And in either way, we'll be disappointed. It won't quite bring us alive. Someone was telling me about a friend of hers whose daughter is 13 and the mother is going through an enormous depression and anger because it's time for her daughter to grow up and leave and separate. You know, the daughter's spreading her wings. She wants to go out and do other things and not cling to her mother all the time. And the mother has received a lot of nurturing from her daughter. And she's very angry at her daughter for growing up. At the same time, she wants her, of course, to be set free. And this is a very sophisticated woman, and she knows this situation, but nevertheless, she's suffering a great deal. So together we were just wondering about love. What kind of love is this? Is this love? Or what might be in bondage that is creating suffering, a kind of twisted thinking that may be present, making it into a thing, and this idea she's calling love with her daughter. When love and hate are both absent, everything becomes clear and undisguised. So now we can visualize for a moment with the mother and the daughter facing one another. And if all the ideas about what the mother is and what the daughter is could fall away, if all the preconditions, the requirements for the acceptance of this relationship could fall away and just leave these two people just standing there looking at each other in that moment with no guarantees of the next moment, what would that be like? What kind of experience might that be? I think that's what he's talking about. If I say, that must have been so heart-opening, there I am putting, again, something on top of it. He says, when we let go of our ideas about what anything is and we just experience it, we're on the great way. That is the great way. You are the great way. It just takes a breath and to let go of any anxiety in your body and just be here. The word we usually translate as faith from Pali is sada, which means to place your heart upon something, to give our hearts over to. How do we know what to give our hearts to? How can we be definite? How do we know if it'll work? What do we trust? So through Zazen, we can see the only thing that makes us suffer is our mind. In Zazen, we begin to see that our struggles and difficulties arise very clearly, not accidentally, mystically, randomly. They arise because of our attachments. That's what the Buddha realized. That's what all practitioners start to see. It's exactly this picking and choosing, pulling towards, pushing away, holding on, rejecting, that creates difficulties. If we wonder and have questions about trust, we can also rest assured we have the answers about trust. What is it? I don't know if I understand it. What do I trust? If we're asking that, we've got the answer. Another thing he says a little further down is, when you try to stop activity to achieve passivity, your very effort fills you with activity. As long as you remain in one extreme or the other, you will never know oneness. When we try to stop activity to achieve passivity. I know probably many of us know this, when we sit down and we go, I'm going to get it. I'm going to get this. I'm going to see it. And we get so tight, sort of jamming our energy. When we try to achieve passivity, filling it with activity, of achieving passivity. The middle way, filled with the activity and trying to be one. At the end of the verse, Satsang says, "One thing, all things, move among and intermingle without distinction. To live in this realization is to be without anxiety about non-perfection. To live in this faith is the road to non-duality, because the non-dual is one with the trusting mind. Words. The way is beyond language, for in it there is no yesterday, no tomorrow, no today. To live in this faith is the road to non-duality, because the non-dual is one with the trusting mind." And what is the mind trusting in? You, yourself, your experience. The faith mind verse is not believing in the Dharma, believing in the Buddha, becoming a student, a soldier of the Buddha. Faith mind is to live in this realization, is to be without anxiety about non-perfection. Yes, I think on a deep level we know this is true, but there's the but. Non-perfection, anxiety about non-perfection. We're so busy protecting ourselves, judging ourselves, and externalizing that to others. And that keeps us from living that kind of trust. And there's such a freedom in that kind of trust. And it's open to us all the time. Shugen Roshi wrote, "We think that the human condition is a life of toil and confusion. It sounds so factual and unavoidable. Slip into it, grit your teeth, get on with it. But is that a human condition, or is that a conditioned human? The self-created self is my view, my thoughts, my pain, my feelings, my perspectives, my rights, my wrongs, my pain, my woes, my stories. Mine, mine, mine." George Harrison sang it too. "All through the night, I me mine, I me mine, I me mine." When does it end? When love and hate are both absent, the way is clear and undisguised. When the self-created self is freed. In other words, when we no longer trap our thoughts. Go step by step along the path. It may have 99 curves on it, but we can actually walk straight. That's what it's about, straight. So trust yourself. I spoke a few months ago about the lotus in the pond. No mud, no lotus. No mud, no lotus. It doesn't grow. You try and cut a lotus and put it in pure water, gone. Needs muck. We need our muck. So honor all that you are. Cultivate this flower that is completely unstained by the mud. It just emerges right out of it. It needs it. It's where the nutrients are. That's cultivation. Cultivate to loving eyes, loving hands, loving ears. For the entire world. Okay, thank you.
Thanks so much for listening. To find out more about the monastery's programs, weekend retreats, and residency, please visit our website at cmm.org.